He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
Eric Eager, brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier. Don't forget about the Corona Hard Seltzer. Listen, going to have a big Thanksgiving meal. You want something a little bit lighter? The Corona Hard Seltzer, zero sugar, 0 grams of carbs. Grab it wherever you find your Corona. Grab it today, as a matter of fact. Get stocked up for the big weekend. We welcome Eric Eager to our T-Mobile guest line. Eric, how are you, sir? All right, now let's try it. Eric, well, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Stren. How about you?
Very good. Much better now that I hear your voice after I, throw it to you. Makes me feel a lot better. There for a second, a little nervous that I was going to have to do both ends of the interview. Don't want to do that. First of all, happy Thanksgiving to you. Hope everybody in the family is doing well.
You as well, Stren. Did you think we'd make it this far in the NFL season, or were you just taking it week by week?
I think once they got going, I felt like, they're going to make it happen. And the fact that they have never really been transparent. Now, this isn't that I would have a problem if college football weren't transparent, because they don't have a collective bargain agreement with the kids playing, right? But the labor in this has signed off on the plan, so I have no problem with it. But that's not my favorite that they're not transparent at all. But once they got going and they weren't going to let us know, well, what does it take to shut it down, or what does it take? I was like, you know what? They don't care. They're going to get this in. So I think I kind of started to become bullish. I also listened to you, who always kind of felt like it was going to happen. I became bullish fairly early on that they were committed to making this work one way or another. Like when we got by the Titans Steeler game, I'm like, they're going to make it happen.
Yeah, that always seemed, especially, once, what was the last game they moved? Was it KC versus Buffalo, or was it Tampa Bay, Las Vegas? Once they moved that, once they didn't come up with a COVID case to get that Dallas Philadelphia game out of Sunday Night Football somehow, you knew that they were going to play all the games.
They had an opportunity.
I was telling George, look, they moved the Vegas Tampa Bay game last week to 4:00. They can't move Dallas. They can't move Ben DiNucci versus Carson Wentz, who, by the way, is worse than Ben DiNucci at some level. Like, at that point, they were pot committed. And I feel like that's kind of what we're going to get the rest of the year. We might be seeing a lot of practice squad guys on Thursday night, but we're going to see them play.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's one of the things that right, selfishly, we're glad. We want to see football. And I do believe, while it's not the number one priority, but somewhere in there is America needs entertainment as well. And I think people going through difficult times need a distraction. And I think life is a lot better now. Maybe it makes us too casual about the virus, as a country. But I think life is a lot better with football going on, and when we had baseball and basketball going on, than it was when we had no sports.
Right. I think I was talking, I can't remember who it was, but somebody who was worked for a baseball team, and I was like, if you would find out, 6 to 8 months later that like we wouldn't have contained this anyway, like would you have just played through it? I feel like that's kind of like, this idea, like, 6 months ago we were thinking about not having the season back when we had, a third of the cases that we do now per day. It's sort of funny that we've just sort of played through it. But I do agree that, for people's mental health and for obviously the economy and things like that, it makes a lot of sense to play. Hopefully we can continue to keep people safe, both in the NFL and college.
Yep, no, that's ultimately what it's all about. All right, Patrick Mahomes, minute 43 to go in a timeout. We were texting. Neither one of us had any doubts, right? I mean, I've come to the conclusion that the only way he doesn't get it done is when people around him, like in 2018, Cam Irving, don't do their job. Otherwise, it's going to happen. If everyone will just do their job, he'll do the superhuman stuff. You know, like I got a buddy, well, you know him, Sean, who will say, like in those situations, he always goes, yeah, there's a line in Top Gun. Come on, Mav, do some of that, you know, I don't know, was it? Do some of that cool pilot crap. You know, it's kind of like Mahomes. Come on, Mahomes, do some of that cool quarterback crap. And there it is. I mean, he flips the switch and goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was the Raiders, unfortunately, this is all hindsight. And you know, if they don't score, then obviously it's a bad decision or whatever. But, like, if I'm the Vegas Raiders, I probably try to take more time off the clock in the subsequent drive because it did look like Reed was not going to just let them score, which might be a conversation. But,
it is.
You know, if I'm facing the Chiefs, I just assume the next drive ends in 7 points. That's how I approach every single possession, which, you know, it's clear that the Raiders weren't in that situation on Sunday because they punted once, you know, near midfield at the end of the half. They kicked a field goal, you know, down when there was a tie score to make it 17-14. And, you know, those points come back to kill you when, you know, you have a quarterback on the other side of the ball that can play perfect football.
So let's talk about the letting them score. I was in favor of that at 2:10, where they had first and goal at the one. I'm like, let them get in. You know, the play should take about, you know, 3 to 4 seconds. So you're 2:06, untimed down, don't return the kick. You get at least one, maybe even a second play before the two-minute warning. And as I look back on it, Andy Reid's comments in postgame where they said, hey, were you trying to let him score? He said, look, there's a time and a place for that, but no, we weren't. And he said, I got Patrick Mahomes. I'm comfortable with about a minute and a half. So I was like, okay, number one, he acknowledged, at least now, or he will in the future, but he's if we take him at his word, he was thinking about when do I let him score, so we at least know it's in his mind as far as the strategy goes. Two, he kind of told us a minute and a half is what he thinks he needs to go get a touchdown, at least with one timeout, that's what he needs. So we got some information there. And three, he was right. Right? Like had they let them score earlier, maybe you're giving the ball back to the Raiders with 57 seconds needing only a field goal.
Yeah, if Bucker missed the extra point or something silly like that. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Or excuse me, that's right. Or 50-something and a touchdown beats you, but yes, if Bucker missed the extra point. Anyway, point being, 50-some-odd seconds is a lot different than what they ended up leaving them. And had Reed kept the extra 25 or 6 or 7 seconds, I think it could have been, you know, maybe the Raiders have a real shot at it. And, by the way, the Chiefs' defense hadn't been playing well.
Yeah, you're right. They had not been playing well. And you know, that really could have been, you know, sort of the way they thought about it. And that's, so I think it was right on the borderline there. As somebody who obviously rooting interest in the Chiefs, I was sort of in that wire, you know. And then the funny thing was the Raiders got a penalty right away too, so it did back them up a little bit. And you know, Chiefs are generally speaking a decent team in the red zone, so you know you can, it ended up being fine. It was sort of a borderline case. I just thought I brought it up because, I'm hoping if the Chiefs get in that circumstance again, Reed's at least thinking about those possibilities.
And I think he will be. What is the math on when? You know, it's different for every team, right? If you got Alex Smith, I don't know, you might want to let him score at about 4 minutes because of how slow they are going down the field when they had Alex Smith. But with Mahomes, is it a buck and a half? I mean, do we take that, what Andy Reid said, and that's where it is if they're in that scenario? As long as they're going to get more than a minute and a half, they can try to stop him?
Oh, I think it also depends upon the timeout situation too, right? Because the thing that the Chiefs were going to eventually be forced to do is use their timeouts. If there's like, I mean, even if it's under 2 minutes and you have no timeouts, I think that's a bigger deal than, let's say there's not, you know, 60 seconds, but you have all 3 of your timeouts. I think you play, you know, because it again, it's sort of like the other team has all the freedom over you. If they run the football and you stuff them, and then they take 40 seconds, and then eventually the whole clock's down and you're basically playing, you know, like that 2017 game on that Thursday Night Football. They're playing with one play, right? And I don't trust the 2020 defense against the 2020 offense on a play inside the five, you know.
How many seconds is a timeout worth?
It depends. And teams fumble this around, you know, near the 2 minute warning, but it's about 30 seconds.
So it, like, three timeouts and 30 seconds is the same as 2 minutes and no timeouts?
Yeah, because you don't have the freedom to stop the clock if the other team runs the football three times against you.
Well, and I understand like how long a play takes and how long it takes to get a playoff in the hurry up, and you can just add that up. But then what I'm curious is, like, the thing to me that the timeouts also give you is the ability to work the middle of the field.
On offense, for sure, yeah. I mean, but there's a point when you're on defense and you don't, like, the other team bleeds it on you so much that it turns it into a one-play game, right? And I'd rather it be a one-play game on offense than defense.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Going down the field, you know, I mentioned Andy Reid's clock management. It's always bothered me, and I always said his career is going to be viewed as Andy Reid before Patrick and Andy Reid after Patrick, you know, BP and AP. And I'm waiting for all the great celebration about Andy Reid, the great clock manager. I never seem to hear it nationally. It's all about Patrick Mahomes. So if it's all about Patrick Mahomes, wasn't it then, when he wasn't supposedly able to get down the field in a hurry, all about Alex Smith and Donovan McNabb?
I think so. I think that's the consistent way to look at it. But I think obviously it is partially because of Reed. And the other thing is with Reed, it's, you know, he developed Kelsey, right? He developed Hill. He's developing, you know, some of these younger guys. And that really, I mean, makes it tough to card them too, right? Like, Mahomes wasn't the only guy, who was a part of this thing, right? And Reed deserves a great deal of credit in developing the players who can think on their own as well.
No doubt. And I think that's one of the things that they've got to make sure they do is give the weapons and give the protection to Patrick Mahomes so he can do these kind of things. Like, we've seen that with no defense, the Chiefs can still be a penalty away from going to the Super Bowl. But when they have no offense, they don't even sniff it.
That's right. Yep. I mean, that's entirely it. And we, you know, you've seen it. I mean, you see it all around the league. Even you watched last night's game. Are either one of those quarterbacks going to make the Super Bowl?
Probably not.
I mean, if McVay doesn't scheme up a brilliant first half game plan where they basically, you know, run play action and quick game the whole time, does Goff sniff beating Patrick Mahomes or Brady? Like, Brady last night made too many mistakes. Patrick Mahomes, you know, to his credit the other night, he was under siege a fair amount of time and he never put the ball in harm's way except for one time, and that was a failure on the part of DeMarcus Robinson.
What do we think, since the Bucs are the next opponent for the Chiefs, what do we think of how Tom Brady's being used by Bruce Arians?
I think it's a feeling out period. If you're from the Bucs perspective, right, you're not winning that division. You're a game or so behind New Orleans. I know New Orleans is starting a backup, but you're missing out on the tiebreaker with them in a big way. Your defense is dealing with some, you know, injuries, but also inconsistency. Murphy Bunting and White are like two of the worst coverage players in football. And I think they're sort of exploring what Brady can do in that offense. You know, your Antonio Brown and Gronk are two players that they didn't have a season ago who are going to, you know, be big parts of the team. I think that they're really testing things out. I think in the playoffs, you're probably going to see more of Tom being sort of vintage Tom, but I could be wrong. I mean, he's looked really awful at times when he's been asked to throw the ball downfield for the Bucs, and he's looked really good at times. It just depends upon sort of the, you know, it's not universally good or bad for him, which is different than normal.
Everyone talks about it. I guess I heard this stat this morning on ESPN. He leads the league in pass attempts over 20 yards, yet his yards per attempt is just 6.8, which, you know, so that's not real high, but they're at least taking shots down the field. And I hear everyone talk about, like, you know, last night they had the stat, 8 INTs. That's how many he had all of last year. Well, he's also already got more touchdowns than he had all of last year. By the way, he'd throw a ninth. At 25-9 right now, he's on pace for 36-13. Like, should there really be any question? Only because it's Tom Brady is there any conversation about whether or not he's having a good year. He's clearly doing better than Jameis Winston, right?
Yeah, although Jameis averaged a full yard and a half more per pass attempt than Brady is, right? Like, he's more efficient in the doubles, I would say, right? Like, Jameis hit a lot of doubles, but he also struck out a lot, obviously. Brady is hitting more home runs, you know, with the touchdowns and everything, but he's also kind of a slappy singles hitter on the other hits, right? So it's interesting. I think Brady's been fine relative to, you know, what could be. It's also, he's in his first new offense in a long time as well. He has to acclimate to a bunch of new playmakers. Now, you know, they've had difficulties with Mike Evans. They've had difficulties with Godwin staying healthy. Brown has come in mid-season. So there's a lot of things they've had to overcome. Donovan Smith's been hurt. You know, Ali Marpet's been hurt on offense. So he's had to overcome a decent amount. He's played fine. He's one of the top guys we have in our grade. But I'll firmly say that he's not a Super Bowl contending quarterback right now for that team.
All right, we'll take a break. More with Eric Eager. We'll talk about the defense. Is this a styles make fights kind of problem with the Raiders? They just have the style. They just have the right combination of personnel that creates problems for the Chiefs' defense. Or is the fact that they've given up more than 30 in a couple of games in a row a concerning sign? We'll get Eric Eager's thoughts about that next. He's the data scientist from Pro Football Focus. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Light, Corona Premier, and Corona Hard Seltzer.
The program with Seren Petro.
If you disappear forever, it wouldn't make any difference.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Good Sense end of the hour question. I asked Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods of the Los Angeles Rams. They're just the fifth set of teammates to have 10 receptions each. Name any of the other four pairs of teammates who did it. Seren, Eric, you guys want to add us to the guess?
I got a guess. I'll let Eric go first.
I'm going to go with Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne.
No, sorry, Eric.
I'm going to go Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
That is one pair. They were the last to do it in 2018.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. In your Eager. No doctorates. I got that answer with no doctorate degrees.
You did. Give me a time frame for the other ones, Chad.
All of them are since the year 2000, at least the year 2000.
Okay. Moss and Carter.
Moss and Carter did do it in 2001.
Good job. Is it is one of them Moss and...
They didn't have a second receiver. Maybe Burleson?
No.
Robinson?
No.
Yeah.
Moss is one of them, though, isn't he?
Yeah, Moss. Think his Patriot days.
Oh, Welker.
Oh, yeah, Moss and Welker.
Moss and Welker in 2009. And then there's one more. This one is the one that nobody will ever get.
Brandon Marshall and Jabbar Gaffney.
Not bad.
Not bad. How about Willie Snead and Brandon Cooks in 2015?
Jeepers.
Exactly. Jeepers.
I forgot that Willie Snead had like a low-key good year for the Saints once.
You guys bomb Willie Snead on a regular basis.
Well, I mean, imagine trying to compete for a Super Bowl with the Chiefs with Willie Snead as one of your receivers. Like, it's absurd. What does this look like?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't mind Willie Snead. I think Willie Snead is one of those guys. You don't aspire to have Willie Snead. You end up with Willie Snead.
Yeah,
he's like one of those guys that
Jake Dobbins in the first round.
Right. Okay. So he's like one of those guys that I used to say, who was the Royal? David DeJesus. He's like David DeJesus. If you have David DeJesus, you're like, we got to be able to find a better left fielder than this. And if you don't have a left fielder, you're like, you know, we can get David DeJesus and solidify this spot.
That's a good way to put it. I'm trying to think of Royals that also fit that bill. I'm blanking. Basically, the whole starting lineup, the whole starting rotation that you guys won the World Series.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take that. Yeah. That's pretty much right. That's pretty much right. We're talking to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus, the data scientist. How much of getting down the field in a hurry is the coach? How much of it is the quarterback? Right. Just to finish that discussion. I'll get into the defense here in a second, but. How much of being good at going down the field like the Chiefs did against the Raiders was Reed? How much is Mahomes?
It's a big deal about the quarterback. I know there's somebody I know within the organization who described Alex Smith as a very good black and white player, a very bad gray player, if that makes sense. And I feel like at the end of the game, it's all gray, right? It's all I don't know if you watched the Rams Bucks, but that play that Goff made down the to Robert mm-hmm. Woods, and they went up and spiked, it got a field goal, ended up being, of course, the difference in that game. Like, that kind of thinking on your feet is not easy, and it's something that's just easy for Patrick Mahomes, right? And that's I think a huge edge over what the Chiefs used to have. I think Reed probably doesn't struggle anymore with the end of game situation than any other coach, but he's always so good at elevating weaker quarterbacks to great success that when it comes to the end of the game and you really need to lean on your quarterback to be able to be mentally flexible like that, it always showed because he was working with a weaker set of cards, if that makes sense. And now that he's got, a couple aces, up his sleeve, like, it just looks so much better.
They're so good at the hurry up, and I think it was Jerry who asked this earlier, and I took my shot at it. He said, why don't they just run that more, right? So I had a couple of reasons as to why I think they don't. Why do you think Andy Reid doesn't?
Preservation mostly, right? Like, I don't know. Do you ever get the sense now that, especially this year, that the Chiefs are just trying to – get through 162 games with 110 wins, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
Like, why don't you start your best pitcher every single game? Well, it's like, because I need it. I need him to win 3 out of 7 games in the series, And to me, that's also like, and again, I didn't agree necessarily with the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick, but the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick is that way, right? Like, when you're playing suboptimal football, he gives you at least a good version of that, right? When you run the football on early downs to preserve games, or, you give Mahomes a rest after throwing the ball 5 times in a row, he gives you a better version of that than what you had with Williams or what you had with, some of the other backs, Spencer Ware in the past. And to me, like, that's the reason. I think that they're, the regular season is almost, just meh for them now. And the Patriots got in that sink a couple, for the last like 10 years, where September was kind of that, where they tried a bunch of things out during that month. And if they started 2-2, they were fine. The Chiefs are in sort of a weirder situation in that a team in the AFC is undefeated right now. But I think it's similar to that, in that they can win these games without their best stuff, and they don't put out their best stuff sometimes.
That makes sense. My theory was, one, I don't think they're the best conditioned team, but I think that's by design. It's not like everybody would love to be the best conditioned team, but we've talked about a lot. There are only so many reps you get, and I likened it to basketball, right? Like, you want to run them up and down the court your whole practice session, great. You're going to have a team that's still ready to run at the end of a game. But if you're trailing by 20 because you didn't have any kind of offense and they don't know how to play any kind of defense, who cares that you're the freshest team? Right, I think Andy Reid's practices are geared towards teaching and learning all his creative stuff, right, and being able to execute it and not doing a bunch of, running around. And so I think if they did play go, 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 number one, I don't know that there's enough, creative plays, right, to play that style of football. And, that you don't run out on the play sheet. and maybe
does there need to be though?
What's that?
Does there need to be though? I mean, Manning and Brady's offense. Well, granted, they weren't as big of a hurry-up team, but like those teams kind of did a lot of stuff at the line of scrimmage, but they were basically the same five plays cycled around, right? Like, so if you play up tempo, like, and you're that fine from a fundamental standpoint, you don't really need that many plays. I just think also, don't you think part of it is the thrill for Reed?
In what way?
Well, if the Chiefs could win by throwing these 5-yard hitches to Hill on every play, right? And throwing the out route to Kelce out of trips, backside of trips. And like they could win kind of being kind of boring like the Colts were and with Manning and the Patriots with Brady, but it kind of takes some of the thrill out of it for Andy Reid.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that he's the mad scientist. He wants to make it fun. I think that also maybe keeps the team wired in. Maybe he's going to keep guys wired in longer. You know, a lot of people leave the Patriots saying, well, it's no fun to play there, and they get burnout, and maybe he's going to avoid that burnout. I just think that, like, if you do it all the time, teams start to learn how to defend it, right? I think there are times to do it. I would like to see him pop it off on a key third down. Right, come out on a second, run a play, and then come right back up there on a third, or even a third and short, and with you know big personnel, and then line right back up and spread everybody out, multiple tight ends against their big personnel, and burn a timeout. Like I think there are things they could do. Again, you've got to have the practice time to figure, you know, make sure everybody's on the right page and what they're doing. But I do think that, like, there's no doubt that your whole, at least Andy Reid's whole playbook, is not available to you in the hurry-up. So,
right, yeah.
If you show the hurry-up without the whole playbook all the time, the defenses are going to get the tape and say, okay, this is how you stop this.
Yeah, but on the other side, if you do that, then, like, in a game against Baltimore, you slow it down and actually hit them with all the big plays. The problem is you don't necessarily have the practice of those plays in game situations if you don't, you know, if you were just to play the hurry up all the time. So it's an interesting question for sure.
We're talking to Eric Eager here in the program. The defense gives up 30 to the Raiders again. They give up 30 for their second consecutive game, a bye week in between the Raiders and Panthers game. Is it a sign that the defense is doing just the opposite of last year? It was hitting on all cylinders for the first half, and now it's starting to lose its mojo? Or is it just maybe a bad matchup? The Raiders have a great offensive line. The Chiefs have two guys that they're paying high dollars to get after the quarterback. That line can neutralize those guys. They're one of the few teams that can then thereby expose the defensive backs, and we're going to get in against any other team maybe, or maybe almost any other team, and they'll get more pressure. And the defense will look a lot better. They just don't want to see the Raiders again.
I think they're concealing some things, but I also think, you know, you're a basketball coach, Seren. Have you ever been in a situation where, I know this is this way, where you have like a 7-foot big man and he can't play against small teams? And I feel like that's Daniel Sorensen, right? Like,
okay.
Sorensen can play against most teams and look fine. He can't play against the athletes that the Raiders have. Kind of, it sounds silly to say, but like every single player that the Raiders throw out there is probably too athletic for Sorensen to cover.
Yeah, how many Darren Wallers are there? There's what, Waller, Kelce, who else?
Kelsey's the best one. Yeah, Kittle gave him fits. Kind of bailed him out in the Super Bowl with the push off at the end of the first half. But like it was sort of a similar idea, right? In that. It's weird. And I don't think, you know, I think Matthew's a terrific player. I don't think he's played up to his potential this year. And he'd probably admit that too. Like there's some of that too. There's some of the shuffling that they've had to do at cornerback with Rashad Breland being suspended, with Ward and Legarius Sneed hurt at times. And then to your point, like they simply haven't gotten the push. Frank Clark was somebody who everybody said, well, Why isn't the CFF grade good? Well, I think we've seen a couple of reasons why the last few weeks, and that he gets big time sacks, right? He gets ending Super Bowl sacks. That one, you know, but he doesn't get pressure that, on the consistent nature that like some of these other elite pass rushers do. He gets big time pressure, but not consistent pressure. And we've seen that, you know, the last few weeks, opposing offenses have sort of neutralized him.
Now the way I would describe him, he's kind of king of the coverage sack, you know?
The sack in the Super Bowl was in 4.5 seconds. So you're absolutely right. Like usually you have to get home in less than three, you know, 2.5, 3 seconds to win. And to his point, like, or to his, I think credit, like that means he's relentless. He doesn't give up on the play. And you know, from what I can measure, he gets off the football pretty well, but it's this like sort of third and secondary moves that are really what buoy him. And unfortunately, like you don't always get that against good offenses.
Yeah, he's the guy that's perfect opposite Derek Thomas, right? Clean up the garbage. After DT's got the quarterback moving around in the pocket the way they don't want to, then, and not that Neil Smith was this guy, because I think Neil was more than that, but I mean, like, you see a lot of combos where they're like, oh, these guys are, you know, they're great, and it's like, well, the one guy's got 9.5 sacks, but, you know, 7 of them he owes to the other guy flushing the quarterback right into his arms. You know, and
yeah,
you know, and I'm not saying that's what Frank Clark is. I think he's more than that. I do think he's a better edge setter. Your grades always show him as sucking on setting the edge, but I think he generally does a pretty good job setting the edge. I do think though that, you know, listen, you can't argue with the strategy. They won a championship with those two guys. Now they didn't have to keep Chris Jones, and I would tend to agree that Chris Jones is the better player, but you'd already paid Frank Clark. So maybe we may look back and say, well, they should have started unraveling that tandem, you know, and not gone down that road with Chris Jones. But they are where they are. I do think they're good enough. If they're just playing an average offensive line, then they should have success.
Yeah, I have to look at the numbers from the other day. Let me actually – but, like, the other thing that they're not doing, right, they're not doing the – you know, and this is something I've wanted to long study, which is sort of – you know, they're stopping the run fine, right? And they're putting in guys like Mike Pinnell and stuff, you know, in terms of like, you know, they're holding the point of attack decently at the expense of pass rush. And a season ago, what they did is do a decent amount of blitzing. Against the Raiders, Ben Neiman rushed the passer 3 times, Anthony Hitchens 3 times, Sorensen twice, Gay, Ward, Breland, and Matthew all once each. Like, that's not the Damian Wilson 5. So they're creeping up there a little bit. No, those guys all produce a pressure except for Sorensen. So, like, but that was something they deployed a lot more last year. Like, hey, our linebackers and coverage aren't particularly good. Sorensen's not particularly good. So let's just have them rush the passer and make the quarterback make quick decisions on us and stop and tackle. And, you know, for the second half of the year, that was a pretty effective strategy. And, you know, you couple that with an offense that couldn't be stopped in some of the playoff games, and that was what worked. And I think now they're not bringing the pressure nearly as often from those secondary guys as they were last season.
And is that just kind of what you've talked about, the running backs? You draft a running back high, you give them a bunch of money, you're going to keep handing them the ball to justify the contract. So now they're not bringing the pressures to justify the money they've given Clark and Jones. And in reality, they need to admit that, hey, we're overpaying them. Let's not try to make them earn their money. Like, we did what we did, overpaying them from the standpoint of what their value is. Virtually anybody who gets to free agency is overpaid because draft picks and undrafted players are so grossly underpaid. But that in reality they're kind of, you know, calling the defense. Spagnuolo is calling the defense based upon how they're doling out the money and not based upon what they actually have talent wise.
Yeah, I think so, and they're in a position now where they can do that, right? Because it's like just a couple games here and there, and there's a chance that they won't get the one seed anyway. But that's kind of the only thing they're competing with right now. But I think when they get to the playoffs, they'll start to be a little bit more creative, and we know that Spags has it in them, so it's nothing really beyond that, right? It's just. You know, and Jones the other day had 6 pressures. You know, like, that's something that, you know, he had 6, Frank Clark had 4. In 30 pass rushes, that's a decent number for Jones. It's not a great number for Clark. You know, and so, you know, eventually they'll have to bring more people. Because we saw it in the Super Bowl. On the final sack, it was really what Neiman and Sorensen's pressure that got him into Clark for the sack. And we say, oh, Frank Clark won the Super Bowl with the sack. It's probably going to have to be something like that on the consistent, on the regular for, you know, the Chiefs defense to be successful, moving forward.
Just kind of looking ahead to next year, what do you do with Sorensen at $4.7 million under the cap and Tyrann Mathieu at $19.7
million? Well, I don't think you can get rid of Mathieu. I think he's probably too good of a player, even though he hasn't played up to that this year. Obviously, I think you have to we talked about it last week, right? Sorensen's probably got to come back at a far smaller deal. And when you look at Sorensen, Sorensen had a 30.1 grade. He played a good game against the Jets. He played a good game against Denver. But for the most part, he's been, really rough this year. He's been targeted 41 times. He's given up 324 yards. And, we all look at the three interceptions, but he has two penalties. He's given up quite a bit in coverage this year. And then, in terms of run defense, he hasn't been great either with 11 missed tackles. So that's, I think, kind of where, some of the issues are, is that he just hasn't been as solid as I think perception would suggest. And, if you're going to be paying him that amount of money in a strapped cap and in a situation where they might reduce the cap too, like, he probably has to be expendable if he's not going to sort of break, if he's not going to give up some of his salary.
We're talking right now to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona. You can check out the Corona Hard Seltzer. Wherever Coronas are sold, 0 grams of carbs, 0 grams of sugar. Think about that when you're having a great big Thanksgiving meal. Get it wherever you buy your Coronas. We'll come back, talk more with Eric Eager about the game against the Bucks. Look ahead to some of the other games around the NFL, some of the other teams in the NFL, and some of the other quarterbacks in the NFL. We'll do that next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation, is Mr. Know-It-All.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus, the data scientist, is in. Eric, how many teams are actually contenders for the championship? How many teams do you think are out there that could win it?
Am I a homer if I say one?
Yes.
The Chiefs in our power ranking are 3.5 points better than the next best team, which is New Orleans, who is currently starting a faux tight end at quarterback. The Chiefs would not be underdogs to any team in the league on any field. So I'm going to throw that out there. To answer your question, I think probably more, tightly, it probably goes Kansas City, New Orleans, Pittsburgh. I'm going to say this because I think they match up well with the Chiefs, Indianapolis. And then because of the quarterback, Green Bay and Seattle.
Okay.
Indy,
and that's it?
Indy squeezes all of the juice out of the orange. And I don't think they have the talent to beat the Chiefs, but I do think that they have the tact to possibly beat the Chiefs. Plus, their defense is that kind of like that Chargers kind of defense, which forces the Chiefs to be fine on offense, which they normally are, but like, I think the Chiefs match up really well with the Ravens and the Steelers of the world. It's more of those, like, kind of defenses that bend but don't break that give the Chiefs a little bit more trouble. And Buckner and Houston, I think, are a better version of Jones and Clark. So that's my answer. I don't think L.A. has a chance. I don't think – let me look at the other teams sort of in the top here. I don't think Tampa Bay really has a chance. Tennessee and Buffalo – Buffalo could. I think Buffalo's high end is pretty good. So let's throw Buffalo in there.
So when you say that, when you say the Rams don't have a chance, are you saying it because you don't think they can beat the Chiefs, or you don't think they can win 3 or 4 playoff games in a row?
Yeah, and that's the thing for me is I don't think any – I have a hard time seeing any of the NFC teams save New Orleans or Green Bay winning four games in a row. Seattle, maybe. But really, like, all those teams are so flawed that it's really hard to see it. So I gravitate towards, you know, the team that will likely get the one seed, which is New Orleans or Green Bay, and the brilliant quarterbacks, which is, you know, nowadays it's going to be Wilson and Rodgers on that side of the ledger. And I just – I can't – has Goff ever played four straight good games?
Not since he got his contract, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that's what I'm worried about with the Rams. We give the Rams actually 7% chance to win the Super Bowl. So our numbers are a little bit more bullish on them, and they are well coached. I mean, not just, you know, Zach Robbins, my friend, you know, we used to work for us. He's the wide receivers coach. You look at those wide receivers, they're amazing, right? Robert Woods is one of the most underrated players in the league. McVay has been great, their new defensive coordinator. You know, he's been awesome as well. Like, they're a well-coached team. I just think it's hard to win with that kind of quarterback.
So let me put it this way, because this to me speaks to how good the Chiefs are outside of Patrick Mahomes. How many quarterbacks could you put on the Chiefs and you would say that they're a Super Bowl winner?
Yeah, let me look. Okay, so Mahomes, obviously. Breeze, yes. Roethlisberger, probably on the borderline, but yes. Rodgers, of course. Wilson, of course. Brady, yes. Lamar, yes. Rivers and Tannehill, I think, are on the border. Goff is kind of on the border there, too. Would you agree?
No,
Murray,
I don't.
Murray, yes.
I don't agree.
Okay.
Because I think you're like, Alex Smith was not good enough. Like, how much better is the team around Mahomes from the team that was around Alex Smith?
I think Kelsey's playing the tight end position at a level we've never seen before. Like,
okay,
he's not dropping the football the way that he did in like the 16 playoffs, right? Where Smith hit him on a seam pass against the Steelers that probably they win the game if he hangs on to, and he just dropped the ball. Like, he was more like he's approaching tight end, the best tight end in history, sort of level play. And back then he was sort of like, you know, a top three tight end in the NFL at the time. You know, Hill is a lot better now than when he played with Smith. It's a little bit better here, I think. And like Mecole Hardman, Byron Pringle, I know Pringle went on IR, but like their secondary receivers are a lot better too than back in the day. I think the players around Mahomes today are significantly better than what was around Smith, which might be making your point. If Goff is on the Chiefs and they get Reed, like, okay, they could probably have a better than, let's say, 12% chance to win the Super Bowl.
Okay, interesting. Because I think this team is a really good team. I was thinking like the 15 team. There are better pieces. I agree. I think this is the best addition. I think Brett Veach has taken what he was given and made it even stronger. But I still think that there are plenty of guys that it's really more about who are the quarterbacks that can win it than who are the teams, which I know you would agree. But I don't think there's as many of them. Like, I don't think Lamar Jackson comes in here and does it, because I don't think Lamar Jackson can throw when they know he's got to throw.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested. Obviously, it's never going to happen, but I'd be interested to see what Reed could do with an athlete of that caliber at the position. Obviously, it's not going to be as good as what they're having now.
Sure.
But it would be a lot of fun.
Sure. Eric, you're the man. We appreciate the time. Have a great Thanksgiving. All the best to your family.
You guys, too. Enjoy what's left of the games on Thursday. And obviously, this Sunday, go Chiefs. It'll be a fun
Joe's
one.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, a little bit of birthday love. Happy birthday to Royals pitching coach Cal Eldridge. I just want to know, where did he go to college? Great food from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue is yours if you know.